Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile monkeys play. Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile, unpredictable Jacob.
Welcome back, Jacob listeners, to another episode of Jacob. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Joe.
How are you feeling today?
Very good. Very good. Especially that we have a very special, fantastic guest with us today, Edwin Dando. He's a legend in the Zealand Agile community, isn't he?
Oh my gosh, he's huge. I knew about Edwin Dando the moment I stepped into the Agile community in New Zealand. His name was everywhere. It was synonymous with Scrum at the time. This is over 12 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could talk about him all day. Let's just introduce him. Hey, Edwin.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Really good to see you.
Good to be here with you both.
Yeah. Edwin, do you want to tell us a bit more maybe about how Agile started in New Zealand? Because I think you are one of the people, if not the person, who started it all.
Yeah, it was. There were certainly very few of us in the early days. So my story was back in the day in 2002, I was a software developer and I got asked if I would like to be a project manager. And I moved into project management with great gusto and excitement. And as a person coming from a very sort of creative background, I realized straight away that this really linear sort of approach to work was not going to work for software development. And I got really curious and I started researching, and I just researched and researched, and I found the Agile Manifesto back in 2002. And back then it was very strange because the manifesto, as you'd know, is a very sort of abstract document and didn't really give you any specific frameworks or ways to bring this to life. So
the early days were quite hard. Like a religious tablet of sorts, you know, it's just these like commandments, but they're not commandments. They're like values and principles, but you know, they're just a list.
Yeah, that's right.
But you saw that. Because like when I saw it, I was told to go see it, right? Because it was like Agile had already sort of had some momentum in New Zealand. The first time you saw that, you saw it on your own, I'm assuming. What was your impression? Like, what kept you
reading? I looked at it and I said, look, this is great. This is exactly what we need. We at the time, I was known for this saying, people deliver projects. It's all about people. And I looked at the manifesto and said, yeah, this is exactly the right direction. I'm on the right path here. But what I found is at first the manifesto was very difficult to take into a phenomenally waterfall world. And slowly what started happening is more and more papers started to be released. So Alistair Coburn released his papers around Crystal. There was some stuff coming out around FDD, feature-driven development, and XP was sort of really prevalent because it had a lot of good practices for engineering. And I kind of liked all of those, but none of them were particularly saleable to a business that you could go to them and say, hey, look, there's this thing here. Here's how it works. We should do this.
Why do you think that is?
I think there was a lot of people feeling very comfortable with Waterfall. And I mean, eventually I got to work with Ken Schwaber and he said it really well. He said, the whole reason that we were all so dogmatic and we all pushed so hard and that Agile was such a almost like a religious cult is that we kind of had to be in order to break the tidal wave of resistance that we were facing. And that's certainly what I felt.
Like give no ground sort of thing.
Yeah. I felt that there was such a phenomenal resistance, and I was, you know, at the time I was called professionally unresponsible and that this thing would never work and how could you ever possibly do work that way. And it really was quite tough, Joe. And so then when Scrum came along and it was kind of packaged up and you could go, hey, look, it's got these roles and this is what's different in your role and here's what changes, and it kind of became clear.
It was like a 10 pages to read that kind of told you a few rules and a few players.
Well, this was pre-Scrum Guide, right?
Well, this was pre-Scrum Guide.
Yeah, there's pre-Scrum Guide. So all there was at the time was the original book by Ken and the Rainbow Book, they called it. And there was kind of nothing else. And so I just got bolted. So I went along, lo and behold, along comes New Zealand's first Scrum Master class. So I put my hand up for it. And that was 2005 with Gabriel Benfeld and Jens Ostergaard. And I just, as soon as I saw that, I just went, that's it, that, like, this is what I want to do. And so I reached out to Jeff Sutherland and said, hey, come to New Zealand. And I couldn't believe it when he said, yes, yeah, I'll come to New Zealand. And so, yeah, lo and behold, here's old Muggins touring New Zealand with Jeff Sutherland. And, you know, I sat in the back of every one of his classes and got to have dinner with Jeff and really got to know him. And he really, really opened my eyes. And Jeff really was my original mentor. And I owe so much to him. On just so much he taught me about lean and the roots of Scrum and how he thought. And I think he came back, I think I brought him to New Zealand twice, and it was 2008 and 2010. And by then I was just completely sold. I was just like, this is what I want to be doing. And so then I reached out to Ken Schwaber and said, hey, I hear you're starting this new thing. I'm keen to be part of it. And he said, sure, come to Boston, went to Boston. Spent some time there with Ken, and sort of long story short, became trainer number 8 at scrum.org all the way back in 2010.
Trainer number 8?
Yeah, trainer number 8 in the world. Is something now, so I'm one of the old school scrum.org people. And the funny thing is, if you look at the evolution of Scrum over the years, like it's actually got simpler and simpler and smaller and smaller. But there's still a hell of a lot of misunderstanding about out there about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were my years, Joe, and sort of that was up to 2010, and then in 2000, so I'd started my own company by this time. In 2006, I started Claris, and we were a real pioneer in helping bring Agile out to New Zealand. And I ended up selling Claris to Assurity in 2012, and that gave me an opportunity. Sort of Assurity's vision was, hey, we could really put some backing in here behind you and make this thing much bigger. And so I got a chance to really help fuel the explosion of Agile throughout New Zealand in those years of sort of 2012 through to 2015, 16. And throughout that time, I just bought out every thought leader I could possibly find that would help bring credibility to this.
Yeah.
Bought out Alistair Coburn, Lisa Adkins, Dave Snowden, Goyko Adzik, Jeff Patton, Josh Kuriewski.
Yasub and I got to be there for some of that too.
It was a magic time in New Zealand. And I was also the president of Agile Auckland. So every time these speakers came out, there was like local meetups and they could go talk at Agile Alley and Agile Christchurch. And it was a pretty sort of explosive time where things really took off in New Zealand.
It just seems like your purpose kept expanding. Like you started a developer, then you needed to manage some projects and you looked in this direction and it clicked with you so hard that suddenly you just started pulling people to you and also radiating what you're learning at the same time. And you know, that turns into like a small group of people, into a larger group of people, into a business that influences heaps of people, that goes to another business that influences even more people, that turns into a conference where, you know, at this point, I remember these days, the Agile Auckland days. When we were there, that was almost the tipping point for Auckland and a lot of New Zealand for I remember it because you didn't have to talk about waterfall anymore. People didn't come to compare Agile to waterfall. They were like, you don't have to convince us. We're here. Just tell us about Agile. You don't have to tell us why it's better than waterfall. Just tell us about Agile. And we also started getting students that never heard of waterfall because they were so young.
100%. I remember that. That was the turning point to me, is when you got people that were asking, like, what is this waterfall thing?
Yeah.
That was a real eye-opener to me.
Huge market shift for, yeah.
But the thing that I've always tried to do, Joe, is blend Agile and business. So, for example, when I came in to be when I first took over as the president of Agile Auckland, we used to stand at the back of the room and shake a collection jar to ask for donations to try and fund this thing. And it really just sort of ran on pennies. And to me, like, I've always had a real business lens from starting and running my own companies. And the first thing I did is I said, right, we need sponsorship. So if we need sponsorship, then we need a bank account. And so if we need a bank account, we need to be an incorporated society. Mm-hmm. So I set Agile Auckland up to be an incorporated society, and then we could go out and start attracting sponsors, because our mission here wasn't just to create an echo chamber for Agile people. It was to actually convince the business community that this thing was serious. And so to do that, you kind of have to present something that the business community wants to participate in, which means it needs to be more than just kind of like a wee homespun meetup group. And so that was the sort of mission with Agile Auckland. And then it went on to the Agile New Zealand conference, and we started that up. Alistair Coven was the keynote at the very first one, and the very first one we ran in Wellington. I think we had 180 people, and we ran it 5 years running, and eventually the last one in Auckland had 550 people, and it was a really big, serious event. It sort of became like one of the top conferences in the New Zealand conference circuit.
That's awesome. But that's still in the past. That's still leading us up to now. This is the crazy thing about you, Edwin, it's such a, I mean, you don't look a day older than when I met you, by the way. You look, maybe it's the energy that you bring, but I don't think you age. You're like, you've got the same genes as Keanu Reeves.
I feel like I age. My body tells me differently, Joe.
but that's still in the past. So like you've had this whole journey up until this point where you've actually, you know, were a heavy influence on agility being mainstream in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then something changed for you.
Yeah, that's right, Joe. So sort of around 2017, I kind of felt I'd achieved my mission in a lot of ways, and I was searching for something new, and I couldn't quite find it. And then in the end, I realized what it was. And in 2018, set up Radically because I realized what I wanted to do is to bring the concepts and principles of this way of thinking into businesses. And I really wanted to see executives and boards and business people understand the potential of this thing, and realize that, again, in order to do that, I kind of needed my own canvas again, as I did with Claris for technology. I needed to do this for business. So Dan and I set up Radically. Dan and I had worked together for years. We'd formed a really strong working relationship. And we started out with this vision of we really wanted to start a management consultancy. What we could see at the time is there were companies in New Zealand who were, when they were looking for serious partners who could take them on large-scale transformative change, the only real options were the sort of the big end of town, the major international consulting firms. And we wanted to offer a New Zealand alternative. We felt that we could offer something that offered New Zealand firms something a little bit different. And
that's extremely bold. because you're talking about you and Dan, how many people, you know, did you have to start with as well?
Just me and Dan.
We
went out and said, hey, we can do this.
It's kind of beautiful though. I love it. You're just like, let's just step into this space and see what happens.
Well, we're a very unlikely combination, Dan and I. Like, I'm 52-year-old Caucasian Kiwi bloke. Dan's a 30-something-year-old Singaporean guy, and we come from vastly different backgrounds. But there's something incredible about the way that we click. It's like a yin and a yang that just fits together. And he's always been very, very bold, as you know. You work with Dan.
He's definitely
a very
bold,
sort of bold, ambitious man. And he looked and went, Ed, you know, with your experience and what you've achieved to date, let's take this further together. And it was kind of what I'd been looking for. And so, yeah, we set out to start this organization that we felt could challenge the existing work paradigm. And our view was that we could kind of see, like, if you take it through the lens of Kinefin, we could see the complex environment coming. And we predicted that the world would suddenly become a lot more complex and difficult to manage, and that the way firms were structured and thinking and operating was going to leave them with what we called organizational debt or operating debt. Mm-hmm. And we looked and thought, man, these firms really need an alternative way to run. And we kind of talked to a lot of different businesses, and a lot of people felt the big end of town was quite, in terms of consulting, was quite unpersonal. It was quite, you know, that sterile image of consulting. And so we looked at it and said, well, what if we were able to offer a really high-end management consulting service, but that was also very human, and could show that consulting can be a real high value add? And that's kind of the premise we started with and then built out. And so the sort of things we're up to these days, there's four key areas we're working in. We started in better ways of working, and we use that phrase quite purposely because Agile is just a very small part of that for us. It's just a tool. And we kind of look at it through the lens of Kinefin, where if you have some more simple and obvious type of work to do, then, you know, maybe an Agile approach isn't such a great way to solve it. Maybe your traditional management is, but then likewise, if your work is complex, then, you know, you kind of need a fit for purpose approach where you'd use Agile. So we tend to take a very framework neutral and a work neutral approach, where we'll blend up human centered design and planning and prioritization, quarterly business review, all that kind of the tools or the stuff, and then go and look at an organization and say, what's the appropriate way of working for you and your firm in the context you're in? So that's one key thing we do. And then the second thing, which I'm sure a lot of people will find they'll relate to, is that as you start to implement new ways of working, you typically find that the operating model of the organization constrains your ability to be successful with those ways of working. And so we've been doing a lot of work in operating model design and helping organizations figure out how can we design ourselves for adaptability. Third key thing.
Interesting. Sorry. Yeah, look, you've gone from teaching people how to do Scrum to basically saying Scrum's great, but it's not necessarily what everyone needs all the time. In fact, not just Scrum, all these other things that aren't even in the Agile umbrella, but complement if you want to do Agile.
100%.
But also, you don't have to do Agile, and they still are useful to you. And
yeah, 100%.
Let's see what your goal for the next step is. We can help you get there, but we can also paint a picture of what's possible when we use these tools. You stop being an expert in one tool, and you're becoming like an expert in many tools now.
That's exactly right, Joe. And for me, it's actually gone full circle. Like, you know, I started with principles in the manifesto and reached out for tools and frameworks that would help bring that to life, and spent a lot of time doing those. And now I've walked away from those tools and frameworks back to principles, and using a whole suite of different tools and that meet those key principles of adaptability.
Do you think that's the future for like the agilist, the modern agilist?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I think, and it's actually a question I asked quite a few of those sort of veterans and big names in the agile industry, like, why do you think the whole industry became so dogmatic and very, you know, very, almost like a cult? And I think the reason is exactly what I said before, is that there was such a wave of that needed to be broken in order for agile to take hold. And I think a lot of the early people like Ken Schwaber, you know, Ken had the reputation of being, you know, the most fired Scrum Master on the planet because he was so dogmatic. And I think a lot of people looked at that and modeled themselves on that and totally became.
I even had a moment where I thought that was the way forward. I learned real quick not to, but yeah, that I totally is true.
Yeah, and I think where we're at now is the pendulum sort of, it swung from one side and then back to the other. And I think it's balancing somewhere in the middle. And so the approach we tend to take is pragmatism. That's really what we've built a lot of our thinking on at Radically, is we'll look at a problem and say, hold on, we're actually here to solve problems. That's really what we're here to do. And it may be that this particular tool here called, you know, Agile or Scrum or Kanban or whatever, design thinking, that this is a good tool for this problem. It may be that it's not. And we actually don't really care. It's actually about the client's business problem that needs solving. That's actually what matters. So that's been a really fundamental shift for us. And we just sort of, avoid all the, we even avoid the word agile in radically mm. because it's just become so tainted with that sort of dogmatic approach.
Yeah. And what else do you see in our community? You know, nowadays we have hundreds, if not thousands of agile coaches and scrum masters, and some organizations have tens of them, and there are kind of waves of hiring and firing, and, you know, meetups are happening, they're starting, they are dying, like a lot of things happening. Yeah, what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, my view, Jakob, is I kind of feel a lot of the agile community has lost their way. And mm-hmm. I say that with all due respect, but a lot of the organizations we talk to have had a poor experience with agile. And typically it's been caused by that zealotry and the lack of pragmatism. There's this sort of, we call it the kind of hippie agile approach, where it's very like the kumbaya kind of feeling, and where it's all about making sure that everyone's all equal and looked after and happy. But it kind of, and that's important. That's one important aspect, you know, making sure obviously that the people are engaged in their work. But this sort of belief that management's evil and that the right thing we need to do is just get managers out of the way and give everyone autonomy, it's kind of just not that practical. And our view is you've got to meet a client or an organization where they are, and you've got to look at the realities of their business, and you've got to be able to help them adopt this thing at a pace that works for them. Not sort of like jam it down their throat or tell them that managers are bad. And the number of organizations I've worked with where I've said to them, hey, there's nothing wrong with management, it's just that it shifts in our world to a slight different approach, the sense of relief on their face is palpable. And I think it's something that actually hasn't helped the whole movement. The other thing that I see is I feel like a lot of the agile community has become a real echo chamber, and a lot of what agile folks talk about is this is just sort of more agile. They think the solution to any business problem is just more agile, throw more agile at it, and that will somehow help it. You know what I mean, right? You've seen
yeah.
that.
Well, there's an SNL skit where they say more cowbell. The song needs more cowbell. And I just, every time someone says more agile, I always think of that. But yeah, no, it's it's just not enough agile. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, so for example, one of the things, I mean, I challenge like agile folks out there, like how many of you have read your company's financial statements? So if you're, whether you're consulting to them or whether you're working for them, how many of you have sort of gone in and tried to understand the core business drivers? That you understand what drives, you know, customer retention and revenue, and what the cost basis of the firm is, and you know what its growth strategy is. And to me, like for example, my buddy Fabio Sanchez, who's one of the he's the third professional scrum trainer in New Zealand now. He came to me for advice a couple of years ago and said, Ed, you know, where do you think I should be focusing my career? And I said to him, just whatever you do, don't read any more agile stuff. Like nothing, mate. Like stop reading agile stuff. You're already a professional scrum trainer, you've got to a certain level that's going to grow. You just need to focus on business. So go back to the organization you work for and get your head around how their business works, and start interviewing some of the more senior people there and get their understanding. And that's going to make you a much, much more effective coach to that organization. So that's my challenge to a lot of the agile folks out there. Like, you know, I think a lot of agile folks are getting left behind because they're heading on the wrong path. And I think they need to be much more focused on business.
And I must say, I've seen this in my career, and that's why I almost abandoned agile coaching. Like I wanted to learn more about business, because I felt like as agile coach, I hit the ceiling of how much influence I can have without understanding how business runs. So yep. I was like, I need to change my role to get the experience and understanding. And now I just love it. It's so much more complexity that I need to now understand and embrace, and uncertainty, but also new concepts from accounting. Like if you don't know accounting, you have no idea how company runs. And then how, if you don't speak language of accounting, some of the leaders, they will not really see you as a partner for conversation. Because, yeah, like how can you talk to them about, I know, how do you run teams if you don't understand how you make money or how you lose money or how, what the costs, cost structure is here.
That's right. And so, and then how can you expect to be able to coach those people or have those people listen to you if you don't have that level of understanding? And, you know, if you really want to, you know, like I spoke to an agile coach about a month ago and said to them, Leon, what's your career ambition? He said, oh, I want to be able to coach the executive.
And I kind of can't tell you how many times I hear that.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of looked and thought, like no insult, but why would the executive want you to coach them? Like, you, what's your value add here? And if you don't understand their business, like, please don't tell me you're just going to come in and talk to them about agile, because you know how that's going to go. That you're going to last half an hour. So I think that's something that a lot of the agile community, my advice to them would be, you know, you guys all know the concept of agile. You it doesn't take that long as a professional for you to get your head around it. Yes, you know, continue to develop that element of your career, but please don't make that all you do. You know, like, that's just one string to your bow. Build out your skills, and in particular, build them out in business.
So you were very Scrum focused, Agile focused, community builder. It led into Agile New Zealand as a conference. Now you're starting up a new conference, and Agile isn't even in the name.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you taken this you know, this sort of next step, and you brought it to how you want to encourage the community in New Zealand?
100%. Well,
what's the conference name?
So we're running this conference called AdaptFNZ, and the whole point of it is to bring the whole business community together to try and figure out, like, how can we build more adaptive and resilient firms to be able to cope with this world of constant change.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it's about. And so what we've done is we've got a lot of different business leaders to come and share their experience of leading organizations through adaptive change. So, example, Nick Richardson, who was the chief people officer at Genesis when they did their big agile transition. Nick was instrumental in designing their adaptive operating model. So she's going to talk about the leadership journey she went through with that. And she's now chief people officer at ASB. And so she'll bring that leadership lens, like what that was like. There are other people talking. So for example, we've got Sir Ashley Bloomfield. He's going to keynote. He's going to talk around what was his leadership journey like, being the face on the telly through New Zealand's COVID pandemic. And it's really interesting when you talk to Sir Ashley and listen to his words. His words are very much similar words that we would experience from the agile community around leadership.
The definition of adaptive. They were 100%. Changing not just every week, every day, every hour. And
they had daily stand-ups as a team.
Yeah.
It's all of that stuff. So yeah, it's on the 29th and 30th of August. We've got 26 speakers in total, including Jakob. He's going to be doing a workshop for us. That's
Jakob. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I heard he's famous.
Yeah, he's awesome. So he's going to be doing an improv workshop for us. So it's going to be fantastic. So there's a whole bunch of familiar faces in there. There's some thought leaders from the agile community, but there's also a lot of different business leaders in there. People like Brian Ferris. He's the chief digital officer at Loyalty New Zealand, and he was across agile transformation at three different versions of Nike in Europe. Frances Valentine is speaking. She's going to be talking around the type of world that we need to prepare ourselves for. We've got a chap called Lloyd Mander speaking. Lloyd is a guru in diversity of thought for solving complex issues and how you create diversity in boards, executive teams, and delivery teams.
You know what's interesting about that is that sounds wonderful, but having tried stuff like that, maybe not to that level of in the org, but having just tried diversity of thought for problem solving, it's actually really hard.
Very hard.
It's very hard. So that's a really good skill to have. Sorry to interrupt, but that one speaker really stood out to me as like a really interesting
topic. Yeah, Lloyd's interesting. I saw him at the Institute of Directors annual conference, and he does a lot of work with boards, and boards realize the criticality of diversity. Because, you know, if you're a monoculture or groupthink board, by gosh, you're at risk. So Lloyd, you know, he does a lot of work in with IOG, helping them build out diversity of thought through boards. We've got five good chunky workshops, 90-minute workshops, one of which is Jakob's. Tiziano Rullo, one of our staff, is going to do one on holacracy. And Tiziano is a bit of a hidden gem in New Zealand. He actually trained holacracy with Brian Robertson, the creator of holacracy, all through Europe. Uh-huh. And he's had a long involvement in helping organizations adopt holacracy. So yeah, some really interesting expertise in there. We've got some stuff, a lot of stuff on leadership, open spaces, lightning talks, you know, a whole bunch of cool stuff.
So we'll make sure there's a link to, are there tickets left, by the way?
Exactly.
But it's going gangbusters. Like, we're 75% sold out, and the venue has a hard limit. So I think there's about 50 or 60 tickets left. Actually, no, there'll be less because the limit's 180, and I think we're at like 120 or something. So I at this stage, I think it is going to sell out. So if people are sort of putting it off, like without the sales spin, like you probably need to get in.
Yeah,
that's good. We'll definitely have the link to get more information and grab their tickets if there's any left. Do people have an opportunity overseas to engage with this at all in any ways? Like, say they can't make the ticket over this year. After the fact, will you guys be publishing anything or, how can people that can't quite make it to New Zealand this time around get more interested in it, so next time around they can, they'll schedule it better?
Yeah. Look, and we've very much designed this year as kind of a slightly richer than MVP version. Like, you'll notice there's no sponsorship this year. There's a lot of things we just stripped out, and we went, let's just do the simplest thing we can. But it will be something that we want to run on an annual basis. At the moment, we kind of don't know how we're going. We're definitely recording the sessions, but we're trying to figure out the most appropriate way to publicize those. In some ways, we kind of want to protect the fact that ticket holders are paid good money to go along and see that stuff. But at the same time, therefore, you know, they'll definitely have access to it. But then there's the sort of question of at what point should that then be available to others? And we're taking a very sort of agile, iterative approach. So we will at some point share that, Joe, but I'm just kind of got to manage the needs of many different sort of stakeholders here and figure out what the right approach is.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, we're about up for time. Edwin, thank you so much for taking the time, introducing yourself to our listeners. And I mean, I've known you for years, but even some aspects of that story I was learning for the first time. So it's what an epic journey it's been.
Oh, it's been an amazing journey, like a phenomenally rewarding career. I've really, you know, I love what I do, and I really, you know, as my family know, like I am a little bit of a workaholic because I really just don't see it as work. It's a passion, and seeing organizations thrive under a different paradigm, a better paradigm that's good for them and good for their staff and good for society and good for everyone, is really motivating for me. It's a good place to be.
If any of our listeners want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Probably LinkedIn. I've got a pretty unique name. There's only one other Edwin Dando in the world, and it's a woman in Malaysia. Go figure. So I'm not that. But if you look up Edwin Dando, you kind of will find me. But especially on LinkedIn's probably the easiest. But otherwise, it's just edwin@radically.co.nz.
Easy.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. It was Edwin Dando. And thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Jakob. We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.